So, if you take a Sean Connery, James Bond film, and then mesh it with Inception, and it had a baby, what would it be?
Tenet. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, the whole time I was watching Tenet, I was just thinking, this is Christopher Nolan wanting to do a James Bond movie. Because if you look, his favorite movie, I think it's On Her Majesty's Secret Service, is his mm-hmm. favorite movie of all time, which is a James Bond film. And then you watch Tenet, it's as if he was like, okay, I can't direct a James Bond movie, but this is what I can do. I can make a spy thriller my way. And that's what Tenet was. Like,
yeah.
I mean, was that the vibe you got the whole time?
Or? Yeah, it definitely was. It was, for me, it was really hard to follow, but you definitely got that spy vibe, like, right from the start. And then it just started intensifying from there. As soon as all like the weird stuff started happening. And when you watch Tenet, you'll know what I mean by weird stuff.
Yeah. And I was just watching it right before Rudy came over, and I was like, I get it. I think I get it. I think I understand what's happening. But then in the middle action sequence is a car chase. And then after the car chase, something happens. And then I'm gone. Like, the movie, I was like, I have no idea what's going on anymore. Like, mm-hmm. I was completely lost. And it's weird that that's how Christopher Nolan's movies are, is at the very end, you're left with more questions than what you had before the movie started. And I think that's the genius of Christopher Nolan. And I don't know. I think that's why he's a director that everybody kind of will always go watch his movies, because there's always a surprise. It's not the same type of movie that you're expecting, you know?
Yeah. And Christopher Nolan has been one of my favorite directors for a while. And just, you know, going back and looking at his movies and some of the things that he's done, everything from The Dark Knight Rises to Interstellar, The Prestige, obviously the whole Batman, Begins series, Dark Knight Rises, The Dark Knight. He was a producer for Man of Steel, Tenet, which we just quickly talked about, Inception, Transcendence, which really freaked me out.
He did produce that.
Yeah.
Why he produced that, right? Because Wally Pfister, his cinematographer, that was his first movie he directed, was Transcendence. Yeah. And I heard it wasn't that great. And a lot of people said, because it's like, you're a cinematographer, you're an amazing cinematographer, just stick to that. Don't try to direct. But yeah, that's why Nolan produced it.
Johnny Depp is at like kind of like the pinnacle of his career at the time the movie was made. Yeah. So everybody went to watch it because he was in there. But the whole storyline for that movie was really kind of slow and weird.
Yeah.
And it was just like, okay. All right. And then Memento, Dunkirk, Following. And the list goes on and on of films that he's been involved with.
Yeah, personally involved with, yeah. So I know we should have talked about this before we begin. You're going to hear us have a conversation here, podcasters. Okay, so do you want to talk about Tenet and then Christopher Nolan, or you just want to have a discussion about Christopher Nolan?
Let's have a discussion about Christopher Nolan.
Okay, all right.
Because I feel like if we start talking about Tenet, we're going to get lost.
And then I think if we start talking about Tenet, we're then also going to just start talking about Christopher Nolan in the first place. So let's okay, if you hear some noise in the background, guys, that's my dog. You know the routine. Oh, here she comes.
Okay.
But anyways, when did you first know the name Christopher Nolan? Like, honestly, like, the first time you saw the name and you were like, oh, this guy's good. What movie was it?
Inception.
So just to be clear. So you, Batman Begins and Prestige had already come out, and The Dark Knight. And then after Dark Knight,
I'd like to have my answer back, please.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to get to. So, yeah.
So I knew who he was when Batman Begins came out. I didn't know he was involved with Prestige at the time. I knew who he was when Batman Begins because that's one of my favorite films from him. But when Inception came out, that's when I was like, oh crap. Like, this is...
This guy is the real deal.
Like, I have never seen anything like this. This is blowing me away right
now. Gotcha. So, I'm one movie back from you. So, I saw Batman Begins, and I loved it. And first off, I'd heard about Memento, but I didn't know what it was. I didn't know... I knew what it was, but I didn't know he directed it. And so, I knew what Memento was, and then when Batman Begins came out, I loved it. And then when The Prestige came out, they promoted it from the director of Batman Begins. And I was like, ooh, this might be a pretty good movie. And then I saw The Prestige and I was blown away by it. And then when it came time for The Dark Knight, I think they finally put his name, like a Christopher Nolan film. From Christopher Nolan comes The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. And I think that was when I was like, oh, this guy's good. And then, of course, The Dark Knight comes out and I was...
Completely.
I was like, this guy is one of the best directors ever.
So it's crazy you mentioned Memento. So like during a road trip from Chicago to LA, his brother Jonathan actually pitched the idea for an idea called Memento Mori.
Yeah.
And it's pretty much about the same plot line. And Christopher Nolan took it, made it into a screenplay, and that's how we got Memento. So if you hadn't guessed, him and his brother Jonathan work a lot together.
And what's funny about Jonathan Nolan is they're both brothers. I mean, they're brothers, obviously. Christopher Nolan has a very distinct, thick British accent when he, you know, that's because he was raised in London. His little brother has just a regular American accent with no hint of British.
Yeah,
it's strange.
His dad was like a British he worked for a British advertising company. His mom was a flight attendant.
So they traveled
back and forth a lot. So that, I mean, I think that's why they have dual citizenship. But his brother co-wrote like five films with them. Memento, The Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises, The Prestige, and Interstellar.
Yeah.
So he, like him and they work together. And if you watch anything that Jonathan Nolan does, like, you know, recently I've been binging the Westworld series. Don't hate me because I've been late on it. I know it's been out for a while, but I just haven't had time and I finally do. And Jonathan Nolan is involved in that series heavily. And you can see the influences that Christopher Nolan has on him and then vice versa with Christopher Nolan. You can see the influence that Jonathan Nolan has on him and how they work very well together.
Oh, yeah. And it's a good relationship. Like when you see Christopher Nolan and Jonathan Nolan, you're like, oh, this is going to be good. These guys know what they're doing. So what was the first Batman, I guess that's the answer. Batman Begins was your first Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah. That was so like, you know, I'm old. I'm like 33 years old. So the only Batman that I had in my life growing up was Batman with Michael Keaton, mm-hmm. Batman Returns
with Michael Keaton.
Then you had Val Kilmer in Batman Forever. And then you had George Clooney in Batman and Robin.
And then Batman was dead.
And then
there was no Batman.
And then all you had other than that was the animated series, which were by far great. And you had animated movies coming out, which were also equally great. But that was it, right? And you had this really cartoonish comic book style Batman movies that were all cheesy. They were well made and they had some big names in them, but it was all comic book style. Yeah. It wasn't very serious. And then you see the first trailer for Batman Begins and you're just like, what is this?
The first trailer had Liam Neeson talking.
Yeah.
And I remember I finally saw the poster for this movie. And all the names on the poster, I was like, so you mean to tell me, I didn't know who Christian Bale was at the time. I was like, so you mean to tell me Michael Caine, Gary Oldman, Liam Neeson, Morgan Freeman are all in a Batman movie. Oh, and Ken Watanabe are all in a Batman movie. And I was like, what kind of a movie is this going to be? Like, I had no idea what to expect.
So if you're not familiar with Nolan and his work, he brings a real sense of realism to his movies. And when I say that, cause you watch him and you're like, you know, this could actually happen.
Yeah.
Like the way Batman Begins is filmed and has the story progressive and how it progresses and how it's shot. It feels like you're actually watching someone's story unfold in front of you. Like it feels so real because they shot everything in Chicago.
For that one, they did a few things, but a lot of that one was on stage for Batman Begins. But what you know, you say Chicago, the way the production design was, they made it feel like a real city.
Yeah.
Whereas Tim Burton's movies, you know, he had a very Tim Burton-esque feel to his Gotham. Joel Schumacher had a very Joel Schumacher feel to his to his Gotham City. And so then when you get to Batman Begins, Nolan has the idea of like, okay, make it look like a real city.
Yeah.
Like, let's make it look like a normal city. And it has a slums, so let's make it look like a slum, and then let's go. And then, like you said, you're watching the movie, and it's not you don't see Batman until like 45, 48 minutes into this movie.
And it's all about, you know, Christian Bale's story. Yeah,
to the point where it's so interesting and so compelling that I forgot I was watching a Batman movie until he, like, comes down and he's like, and Tom that's another thing. Tom Wilkinson was in Batman Begins, you know, and that was another one. I was like, what's Tom Wilkinson doing in a Batman? But anyways, and he's like, who the hell are you? And he pulls him up. I'm Batman. I was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And then the movie just doesn't stop after that. Once he's Batman, the movie is just action the whole way through. And it was so unique. Like, I was amazed the whole time I'm watching Batman Begins. You probably felt the same way. You're like, is this movie this good? Like, am I
overthinking this?
Yes,
exactly. And then the more I watch it, it's like, yeah, this movie is, even I watch it today, I've watched it, I don't know, countless times, and I still watch it, and I'm just like, damn.
Yeah, like how did,
like that speech that Liam Neeson gives Christian Bale when they're sitting around the fire, like on the glacier, and you're just like, oh my God, dude, like, this is.
Fun fact about that scene. I don't know if I already said it already. So there's a part where they're fighting on the ice and then he falls into the ice and he's over there rubbing him, you know, he's rubbing his arms and Liam Neeson says, rub your chest, your arms and legs will take care of themselves. David S. Goyer, who wrote the screenplay for Batman Begins, later said, that's not true. He goes, it sounded good, but it's actually not the truth. He says, but Liam Neeson said it so well that I guarantee you there's some Boy Scout out there somewhere doing that. Like, no, rub your chest. It'll your arms and legs. He says, but if that ever happens, don't listen to us ever.
Don't listen to us.
So that's just a fun little fact about that one. But so yeah, Batman Begins, it was such a great intro to Batman. And what's really funny is if you watch, you didn't catch Following, right?
I did.
You watched Following?
I did. I watched it the other night.
It's on, where is it? It's Hulu, or it's on one of those things. Yeah. And did you notice Cobb is the name of Leonardo DiCaprio. But anyways, the main character in Following, when he goes into his apartment, he has a bat signal on his door. And I was like, man, was Nolan already like
thinking about,
he was like, I love Batman. I want to do a Batman movie. So if you watch it, there's a bat signal. And this was years before he even did Batman Begins.
Yeah, so Following, the budget for that, let me look at this.
The budget was super low. And while you're looking,
the budget, I believe, was only 3,000 pounds.
Which is nothing. And it took him a year to make that movie.
Yeah, so it was a 3,000 pound budget for this movie. They shot it only on the weekends over a course of a year.
Yes.
And the movie was inspired by his house being burgled as a kid.
Jeez.
So he took like, okay, like, this is a traumatic experience. I'm going to express it on film. Christopher Nolan started, you know, making movies at the age of 8.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he would, you know, take away his dad's camcorder and just start go filming stuff around, like, just randomly. Yeah, like, this is in his blood. You know what I mean? This is something.
He was born to do this.
Yeah.
And Following is, it's one of those where it's not a feature, but it's considered a short film because it's not an hour and a half. It's like an hour and 5 hours and 10 minutes long. And it's such a unique type of story. And the ending of the movie, you're just kind of going, what just happened? You know, again, he was already doing that whole cerebral kind of ending. And it's all done in black and white. And it's very low budget. Like, it's super low budget. But it's interesting as beyond all reason. Did you catch Doodlebug?
No.
Doodlebug was really good. That was a short film he did right before he did Following. And if I'm not mistaken, at like festivals for Following, he would ask people, hey, I'm doing another movie about this. And he would pitch Memento. And that's how he got funding to do Memento, was asking for donations to do the movie. And Memento comes out. I didn't catch Memento until after Batman Begins. Like, how did you catch Memento?
I caught Memento after Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Because after Batman Begins, No, I take that back. I caught it after Inception, because after Batman Begins, I kind of had an idea who Christopher Nolan was. But like, gotcha. I said, when I watched Inception, I was like, holy crap, like, yeah. Who is this guy? So then I started really digging in and going back and watching some of the stuff he's made. And then I caught Memento at that point, and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah. Oh, hold on, guys. We're gonna take a little quick pause here. So you caught Memento, and you were like, whoa. What was it about Memento that made you just go, whoa?
Just the whole concept of the story.
Yeah.
Like to me, like, I had never seen a story like that ever, you know, and it's crazy to follow, like, someone who doesn't have great memory, mm-hmm. but always uses something to remind himself that, hey, I need to do this. I need to catch it. And that's how he's following, you know, to catch his wife's killer, or what, you know, catch. I think it's his wife's killer.
The guy raped and murdered his wife.
Yeah.
And what's so interesting about that movie is you see the ending first.
Yeah.
You see in the whole movie. Okay. Spoiler alert, is the whole movie is told backwards. So the first shot of the movie is the ending of the movie. And then you then start to go further into the past. And then at the very end of the movie is the beginning of the story. And it's one of those movies where it's so compelling because the way it's edited, the way it's told, that at the very end, the last like couple of seconds of the movie, you're going, wait,
hold on,
wait a second. What did I just watch? And that's the genius. I think he got an Oscar nomination for that. And Guy Pearce was in there. He had Guy Pearce, Carrie Ann Moss, and I can never remember that actor's name. The guy, he was on The Matrix. And anyways, he had names finally when he did Memento. And I think I caught Memento before you a little bit. I caught it right after Dark Knight. I was the same as you. I was like, I got to see all this guy's stuff. And then I went and watched Memento, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then when The Prestige came out.
Yes, I've been waiting for you to bring up The Prestige.
So The Prestige, like I said, it was promoted as from the director of Batman Begins. The cast was insane. Okay, before we go on, we did skip one. Okay, the reason we skip Insomnia is one, because that's his first studio movie. And two, he did not write and direct Insomnia. You see his style, but you can really tell it's not really a Christopher Nolan movie. It's a studio Christopher Nolan movie. Mm-hmm. And it was successful. It did make money, but that made the way for Batman Begins. And so after Batman Begins, he does The Prestige. And the cast was Christian Bale,
Hugh Jackman, Scarlett Johansson, Michael Caine, David Bowie, Rebecca Hall, Piper Perato, Andy Serkis,
yeah.
Like, and the list goes on and on.
It was crazy. And I remember one of my buddies, he saw it before I did, because it came out my senior year of high school. And I remember one of my buddies, he was like, I didn't expect it to be that dark. And I was like, well, it's from the director of Batman Begins. I didn't know his name. I was like, it's the guy who directed Batman Begins. He goes, yeah, but it was like really dark. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, so when Hugh Jackman goes like underneath the stage and you see all the duplicates.
Oh my God, the ending, I was like, oh. Like the moment that movie, I know, spoiler, we're getting the heavy spoilers here, but if you haven't seen The Prestige, it's been over 10 years. So
I'm pretty sure it's not a spoiler. It's been like almost 15 years.
But that last shot of the movie, you're just like, oh. Yeah. Like, no way. And the cast, again, was just beyond amazing in that movie. And the production design and the story structure of that movie is just insane. It's so good. It's if you haven't seen it, you have to watch it. And that was what made me really love this director. I still didn't know his name. And then Dark Knight comes out. Oh. And that was it, man. He put himself on the map. Like, he was like, I'm Christopher Nolan, these are my movies, and I'm not going away.
No.
And it was so great. And it was, we've talked about The Dark Knight in our other podcast, but that movie, just, I'll always remember the first time I watched it. It was such an experience. It really was an amazing experience. But then after The Dark Knight is Inception, and this movie
took it to a whole new level.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, I could do Batman. I can do that, but I can also do this. and Inception was, I wasn't expecting that at all.
Dude, Inception threw me for so many loops. Like, I was just, it's crazy because you had movies like The Matrix already out. So you had something similar to what Inception was. But Inception was something completely different at the same time. Like, it was more realistic. It was more probable that could actually happen. Yes. But then when they start exploring the depths of someone's mind and how imaginative, like, they got with the set designs and how they did the movements for the cameras and how the actors were moving around and how they started talking about the psychology of what they're doing and why they need to do stuff. Like, a lot of that's real science. Like, he uses so much realism in his movies, and it's so inspiring to see that. Inception took it to a whole different level for me. Like, I absolutely was entranced with that movie. And you told me a cool fact about that movie, about a prop that he used.
Yeah, it wasn't the same prop, but it was the same design of the hallway sequence in Inception when Joseph Gordon-Levitt's fighting the guy.
Yeah.
And the hallway is spinning, but the camera is on the floor of the hallway, so you're also spinning with it. It was a genius way to do it. But that technology and that style was done in 2001: A Space Odyssey with Stanley Kubrick. There's a shot in the movie where this guy is training and he's running, but he's running sideways. But in reality, the set was moving and he's just standing in one spot. I'll never be able to figure out how Stanley Kubrick did it.
I mean, we know that 2001: A Space Odyssey is one of Nolan's favorite films, and Kubrick is actually his absolute favorite director.
Yes,
so it would make sense for him to pull that kind of trick out of the hat from Kubrick, you know, and kind of try to use almost the same technique that he did, which is kind of amazing. Yes,
it was that hallway sequence. I remember everybody like just in awe because it was in the teaser trailer and everybody was like, what the hell is going on? And then the movie was one of the most exciting sequences of the movie, of the hallway spinning. And you're trying to figure out, how is this working? Like, what's happening? And then you figure out that they built this huge set that just rotates around and around. And it was the ending of that movie. I've never been so frustrated in my life.
So frustrated. Did the top fall? Did it fall? Did it wobble?
I saw it wobble. Like, right when it wobbles, it cuts to black. And then even the cast of that movie, DiCaprio, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tom Hardy, Ellen Page, dude, Michael Caine, Marion Cotillard, who else? I think I'm missing Cillian Murphy was in there too, and
Ken Watanabe.
He loves Ken Watanabe.
He uses a lot of the same actors work with him. And I remember reading a story when Tom Holland took the role of The Dark Knight Rises.
Tom Hardy. Holland is Spider-Man.
Yeah.
They're British. It's
Tom H. The big one.
The bigger guy.
The bigger guy.
Not Spider-Man, but Venom. Okay, yeah. So, yeah.
Anyway, so I remember reading an article whenever he approached Christopher Nolan about playing, because he approached Christopher Nolan about playing Bane.
Yeah.
He wanted to play Bane. And I remember him talking about the experience of working with Christopher Nolan on Inception. And he's like, it was nothing like ever before. Like, working with him was one of the best experiences in Tom Hardy's career. So he wanted to work with him again. And I say that because if you look at a lot of his movies, Christian Bale has been in multiple movies with Christopher Nolan.
Yeah.
Michael Caine has been in almost all of his.
Almost every single
movie for Christopher Nolan. Joseph Gordon-Levitt has multiple times. Like, all these actors and actresses want to work with him because he's a great director to work with. He's a by all accounts, a good guy.
Yeah.
But he's also a visionary in terms of how he makes his movies and how he directs the people on his sets.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's according to what I've read from Tom Hardy, it's an experience like you've never seen or been a part of before. Yeah.
And that's just shows you, like, he, like you said, they love him, but two, he also trusts those actors as well. Like, yeah. And it's funny. He's almost like the Wes Anderson of serious, like, movies. You know what I mean? I mean, Wes Anderson makes serious movies, but like how Wes Anderson will always use the same people in all of his movies. Christopher Nolan is the same. He'll yeah. use all the same yeah, people.
He trusts a certain few, but yeah. the ones that he trusts, like, they're pretty darn good. Yeah.
Michael Caine actually went on a record. And he said Christopher Nolan is one of the greatest directors to ever live. And I guess Michael Caine has been around for a long time, and he's been in almost every single Christopher Nolan. Has he been in every single one?
Not every single one.
Which one was he not in? I'm trying to remember. Because he was in Inception. I know he was in Memento, but he was in Batman Begins. He was in Prestige. He was in The Dark Knight. He was in Inception. He was in Interstellar. He wasn't in Dunkirk.
Nope.
That's the one he wasn't in. But then he was in, he did the new Tenet as well. So
Christopher Nolan goes dark for a few years. Like he doesn't do anything for a while. I mean, he produces Man of Steel in 2014. And then, I think that's it. I think that's the only one he helped make for DC.
Yeah. He wrote the story for Man of Steel.
Yeah.
He is executive producer, I think by contract, on all of the movies now. Because if you look, his name is in the credits.
Yeah, him and his wife's name. You can tell by how they're made and how they're written that he had no hand in it.
Yeah, so
it's one of those like, okay, you're gonna use my name either.
So his name is on all the new DC movies. So yeah. that's just the way it is. But yeah, he goes dark. But then he comes out with Interstellar. Mm-hmm. I know we kind of skipped The Dark Knight Rises. We talked about The Dark Knight Rises one time, but yeah. It's not my favorite Nolan movie.
And it was very rushed.
It was very rushed, and it was very, I think that was his way of telling the studios, like,
don't rush me.
Don't rush me, and two, you just want money, so I'm going to give you just an action movie. That doesn't make any sense. But so Interstellar comes out, and I remember, okay, so this movie production was kind of weird because at first it was a Jonathan Nolan written movie directed by Steven Spielberg. At first, like that was the thing. And then Steven Spielberg, I think, got busy and he had to leave. And so Jonathan Nolan stayed on. And then Christopher Nolan came in to take over that production. And Steven Spielberg stayed on as a kind of like a advisor. And then Steven Spielberg ultimately left the production. Jonathan Nolan also kind of helped with the script. And then Christopher Nolan came in and almost did a whole new script for Interstellar.
Yeah.
And directed it, you have Matthew McConaughey, Michael Caine, John Lithgow, and Anne Hathaway. And I know I'm missing like
star-studded cast.
Yeah, it was a huge cast.
Star-studded.
And this movie, I remember somebody told me, they were like, I don't know how he's going to top this one. I was like, why? He says, because the content of it is insane. Like, I don't know how Nolan's going to be able to top what he does in Interstellar. And I'm watching the movie, and I was thinking the same thing. I was like, this is huge.
Yeah.
Like, this is a massive movie. Like it was insane. It was a crazy idea of a story. And it's visually just awesome.
Yeah. It's a beautifully made, visually it's amazing.
Like, yeah.
And they even goes as far as, you know, when they go out to the far reaches of space and then Matthew McConaughey gets stuck into the, like
the Tesseract.
Like, it's just visually beautiful, and the story itself is great, but at the same time, I'm watching it, I'm like, okay, I wanted more.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I love Interstellar. I love that movie. But it's also one of those movies and one of the first Christopher Nolan films that I can actually say that I'm okay not watching it again. Like, I watched it once. I watched it again to kind of get some parts that I missed and pick up on some stuff, but I'm okay not going back through it.
Gotcha. Like, I can see what you mean.
I may be the only one that feels that way, and you can throw hate on me.
Nah.
Even though we've been praising Christopher Nolan this whole show, but that's the one movie that I've, at least for me, I'm good watching it one or two times. And then after that, okay.
I can see where you're coming from on that one. I've seen it a few times. That was actually the movie, and a little sentimental. I married her, but my girlfriend at the time, that was the first movie we saw as a couple, was Interstellar.
Really?
Yeah. That was our first date movie.
So this is funny.
No way.
This is funny. It wasn't Interstellar, but it was a Christopher Nolan film. My wife's first date we watched Transcendence.
Okay. Okay. All right.
And we had to leave at the end because she had gotten a headache.
Mm.
So we had to watch the movie later on, but it's funny that
Christopher Nolan has a weird say over our lives, right?
Yeah.
But,
darn you, Christopher Nolan.
So a funny thing, and you know, one thing I want to talk about is the relationship between Hans Zimmer and Christopher Nolan. Hans Zimmer wrote the score with James Newton Howard for Batman Begins. He didn't write Prestige, but then they both wrote The Dark Knight. Hans Zimmer writes Inception. He does The Dark Knight Rises. And then Interstellar was, I think, their last movie. No, then he did Dunkirk. But with Interstellar, Nolan told Hans Zimmer, okay, everybody's expecting your drums. Because Hans Zimmer is huge. I don't know if you know this, but he uses drums really well. But he says, let's try something different with Interstellar. He didn't show him the movie. He said, this is what the story's about. He told him what the story was about. And he says, I want you to feel the music through the story without seeing it. And so Hans Zimmer wrote the main theme. I mean, he ended up watching it, and then he wrote more music for the movie. But the main theme was him, and that organ playing was him just interpreting the visions of space, the family, the daughter, the father. And that was that beautiful, that organ theme in the movie is... That's that. And I thought that was gorgeous. Beautiful. And funny thing about that movie, they announced Matt Damon was in there, and then they quickly took his name off of every promotional for the movie just for that reveal for him to be in the third act as, you know, the doctor, which I thought was really funny. Like when he stands up, you're just like, what? Matt Damon's in this movie? And yeah, the visual effects of that movie are just top notch.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a great...
It's a very well-made movie. It's a very beautiful movie. Yeah.
But I understand what you mean, though, because the ending is frustrating for that movie. The ending is very frustrating. And I heard another podcast. I know I sound bad for quoting another podcast, but they said a lot of Nolan movies end where it should start to begin again. Like, there should be another act a lot of his movies end.
Nolan, for a lot of it, not all of his movies, but for a lot of his movies, like Man of Steel, Batman Begins, Interstellar.
Yeah.
Like, I've noticed with him, like, he likes to do a lot of origin stories.
Yeah.
Like, his Batman Begins, by far, is one of the best Batman films ever. Yeah. Like, and it is today probably the best origin story. Now, again, that three series set is based off a separate comic book series than what the other ones are based off of. But still, like, that story, that movie he made is a great origin story. Man of Steel, he produced it with Zack Snyder, is one of the best Superman movies other than the original one in 1978. Yeah. Like, but is one of the best, like a very, very close second to the original Superman movie.
Agreed.
Just because of the origin story that it told and how it told the story, like it was so immersive. And he does that with a lot of his films, and I can see that with Interstellar. Like after you just mentioned, like I can see that
where it's more of an origin story than when it ends. You're like, I want to see the next movie now that should be coming after this movie. You know,
yeah.
That was the same with Inception. When Inception ended, a lot of people were wondering, is there a sequel to this movie? Because it looks like it's about to begin again.
See, I didn't get that with Inception.
Like, I didn't get that either, but I know a lot of people wanted a sequel.
As soon as Leo looked up and walked away from his top, I was like, it's over.
Yeah,
like,
movie's done.
He's finally happy.
I remember. Funny story. I watched it, and I watched the midnight showing of that movie. And as the top was spinning, some guy yelled an obscenity and said, just... fall already. You know, the top is spinning there, and we all laughed, and then it cut to black and everybody just gasped and yelled, and my buddy threw his soda on the floor. Like, it was so upsetting. I was so angry. But then
I wasn't angry. Like, I every time I watch it and I see him, like, he turns and looks at his daughter or his son.
It's both his daughter, it's and his son.
Daughter and his son, and it's just, he walks away, and I'm like, he's found peace.
Yeah, I get it. And I think Michael Caine, I know we're going everywhere, but Michael Caine actually kind of like settled it once and for all. He said, you know, one time he did ask Nolan, so what's happening? How am I even in this? Like, am I even really there? And Nolan told him, when you're there, it's real. When you're not there, it's not.
So he was like, oh, okay, cool.
All right, that makes sense.
I mean, Michael Caine needs, you know, he has the best, like, story, which is, I look on the first page, I look on the last page. If my name is on both pages, I'm going to do the movie. So I think he looked in the last page. He goes, oh, I'm the last scene, so I have to do this movie. And then now that you know that, you got to go back and watch Michael Caine movies, be like, oh, my God, that's so true. But anyway, yeah, that was, so he kind of put the nail in the coffin for that argument. So the ending is real. He does, you know, but when that first showing, though, man, that was so upset. But anyways, yeah. So Interstellar, great movie, great success. And this whole time, Nolan has been nominated for an Oscar or two Oscars, but he's never won. Mm-hmm. And then.
A travesty.
Then comes Dunkirk. All right. So Interstellar, there was that whole gap. And then you get to Dunkirk. And then again, here's another sentimental funny thing. Dunkirk was the first movie my wife and I watched when we got married. So the first movie we watched as a couple dating was Interstellar. And then we dated that whole break Christopher Nolan had. And then we got married. And then Dunkirk came out. And then the first movie we saw was Dunkirk.
Interesting.
And yeah, very interesting. So Dunkirk is a historical movie. It's an incredible true story of what happened. And I remember seeing the trailer for it and just being like, how is this movie gonna go? Like, it's a Christopher Nolan movie, but it doesn't look like a Christopher Nolan movie. It looks like a very serious kind of war film. But then you see the format and you're like, oh, this is a Christopher Nolan movie. That movie was very, very
intense.
And yeah. A lot of people didn't like it because a lot of people were like, there's no character development. You don't get to know what the boys, who any of the characters are. And I remember the first time I watched it, I kind of felt the same way. But then the second time I watched it, I got it. I was like, he's literally just saying all these boys, their story, what they want is to go home.
Yeah.
That is it. All they want is to go home. Mm-hmm. And then that's all you needed. You didn't need to be like, well, you didn't need that moment where they're sitting around a campfire and he's like, well, I grew up in this town. I remember home. I remember. You didn't need any of that for this movie. Okay. And I thought that was perfect.
And I think that was Nolan's way of saying, like, yeah, you know, Saving Private Ryan, great movie. All these World War II movies that have come out, great movie. I think that one took place in World War I, I believe.
It was right at the start of World War II. Yeah, World War II.
I think he's saying, like, you don't, and like to your point, like, you don't need those backstories.
Yeah.
Like, these kids, these boys who are fighting this big grand war in the late 1930s, early 1940s. All they want to do is go back home.
Yeah. And it was such I had to look up the story and figure out that these guys, they were in an invasion and then they got cut off, and on their retreat, they couldn't get home. And so they're just stuck on this beach and it's terrifying. And the German planes just come in and bomb them and then fly away and just picking them off one at a time. And I was just the whole movie, my eyes are wide open. I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was great. And I heard somewhere somebody said it's one of the most accurate depictions because the soldiers are all young. Because I don't know if you know this, but if you watch a lot of like Saving Private Ryan,
yeah,
you're like, oh, these guys are young, but then
young-ish.
And that was what Nolan was trying to tell everybody. It was like, no, these guys were like 18, 17, 19 year old kids on this beach, just couldn't go anywhere. And I saw that in IMAX. The sound mix was insane. And the dogfight sequences were just out of this world. And how he shot those sequences were in, like, how did you see it in an IMAX or regular screen?
Okay. Regular screen.
Was the sound mix pretty intense there, or was it?
No, yeah, it was pretty intense. Okay. I mean, by the time this movie came out, I mean, obviously the sound quality in IMAX theaters 10 times better than a regular theater.
Yeah.
But regular theaters now have so much better sound equipment that you can still get you can get a very immersive experience from the sound.
I agree. But that was one of those movies that I saw the trailer and I told my wife, I was like, we have to see it in IMAX. Like, mm-hmm. He shot it in IMAX. I have to see Nolan do it in IMAX. And the flying sequences, how they rigged the planes. They actually did it here in Texas too, which I thought was, somebody had the planes here in Texas, which I never understand that doesn't surprise me
yeah. one bit,
because even when they did Pearl Harbor, they were like, oh, there's somebody in El Paso that has Japanese Zero airplanes, and you're like, why the hell does a Texan, but anyways, we're weird here.
Trust me, there is not surprising. People like to collect all things.
Yeah, so somebody had the planes from that era there, and they had another plane that they rigged, and it
not
was
not only
crazy.
Just had them, they were functioning.
They were functioning. Yeah,
they were functional airplanes,
and a lot of those
worthy
shots,
of air.
I don't think they used a green. No, they didn't use a green screen for any of the shots. They built this rig off of, I think it was Santa Monica or somewhere off the coast of California, where there's a rock that kind of juts out a little bit. And if you look at it, if you put the camera at a certain angle, it's just ocean. It's just water because they're high up. So what they did was they actually built the cockpit on that rock, and they put the actor in the cockpit, and they would move it around to mimic him flying. And a lot of the interior shots are that.
That's crazy.
And if you watch the behind the scenes, it's, I forget who it is. It's Nolan and somebody else are the ones who are
maneuvering.
Okay, he goes left and they like pull the whole thing, and then they tell the actor to, and he does it. And then you see it move and you see the water in the back turn, like the water goes out of frame and you see the sky. And I was like, oh my gosh.
It's insane.
That's beautiful.
It's insane.
He got nominated for Best Director, Best Picture. He didn't win. I think the Academy just hates Christopher Nolan. I'm just going to say that right now.
I don't know why.
I think I know why, because he's very outspoken about the way cinema should be going and what cinema should be happening. Because if you, Christopher Nolan only shoots film, he doesn't shoot digital. He doesn't want to shoot digital. Reason is because he grew up watching film. Okay, he's a purist. All right, he's a more polite Tarantino when it comes to the film digital. Because Tarantino is going to be really loud and obnoxious when it comes to film and digital. But with Nolan also, like Tarantino, grew up with film, worships that format, and just wants, that's how every movie should be made. And so I think his outspokenness with how the industry's going, I think may kind of people go like, ah.
Yeah, and I've heard and I've read stuff about that too. But at the same time, it's like, you know, you have to adapt with change.
Yeah.
And digital is not making the film industry worse. It's progressing the film industry. But I can see Nolan's argument, you know, just by the quality of films that he makes,
yeah,
and how authentic they feel and real they feel. Like, I don't know, sitting here, if I can get that same experience watching Batman Begins or Inception or Interstellar, knowing that if it was all digital,
yeah,
or would I be able to tell the difference?
Here's a funny thing. I think you would. With a Nolan film, the way the cinematographer, he only uses two. Wally Pfister and then Loit van Hoyt, I think. Mm-hmm. Loit van Hoyt. Who, I missed the fact, which I told you yesterday.
For Interstellar. Yeah.
So Interstellar was filmed on IMAX, and it was one of the first movies actually filmed on handheld IMAX. Because this guy's a pretty big guy, and he built a rig to hold the camera on his shoulder. And the IMAX cameras are huge because the reel doesn't go through vertically. I think it goes through horizontally.
Mm-hmm.
And which film goes that way. But anyways, and so he had this huge rig on his shoulder and he's filming. And that's why if you watch Interstellar, there's scenes that are in IMAX and it's shaky because it's handheld, which had never been done before, which blows me away. But anyways, Wally Pfister did make, he did have an interview and he said, you know, I love digital, I love film, and eventually Nolan will have to do digital. He says, but I guarantee you he'll be one of the last directors
to ever do
that switch.
Yeah.
And so for now we get these Christopher Nolan movies, and which brings us to Tenet. And I'm watching Tenet, and
I remember... When you first showed me this trailer.
And, yes.
The first words out of your mouth was, what have you been up to, Christopher Nolan?
what are you doing, man? That was what I posted. I was like, what are you
been up to, Christopher Nolan? And then I watched the trailer. And so Tenet was one of the only movies to release in 2020.
Yeah.
In theaters.
It was supposed to save
the movie industry. But unfortunately, COVID was still going strong in the summer, so that didn't happen.
It didn't happen, but it's still released.
It's still released to a very low, low box office numbers, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But it released. I caught it in theaters. I was able to rent out a theater for my birthday. That was my birthday gift in 2020. Someone
didn't attend.
Yeah, I'm not sorry.
Name any names. I'm sorry, but
whatever. But I remember the teaser trailer showed before The Rise of Skywalker, and that shot in the trailer where you see the car on its like flipped over, and then it just rewinds itself and flips back over. I was like, whoa. Wow. And then I'm thinking, that's a Christopher Nolan movie. If I that's pure Christopher Nolan. And I was watching it, and I laughed because the lighting of the movie could easily be mistaken for a Dark Knight movie. Mm-hmm. Like, if you really watch it, the lighting of it, he didn't really change. And now that I look at it, except for Interstellar and Dunkirk, a lot of his movies are like
that similar lighting.
You could be like, oh, this is like Inception. There's shots in Inception that I'm like, oh, that's a Dark Knight. Like, they lit it just like the Dark Knight. Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff in Tenet where I was like, oh, this is the Dark Knight, like, hands down. Yeah, that movie has John, what's his name? Washington, Denzel
John, Washington. John David Washington. Yeah. Elizabeth Debicki?
I'll never be able to say. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll never be able to say her name. Robert Pattinson, Aaron Taylor Johnson, Kenneth
Branagh,
Clements Posey, Himesh Patel, which I love Himesh Patel. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Michael Caine, obviously.
Of course, Michael Caine's going to be in there.
And a number of people. Like, this movie was also stacked.
And I remember when this was first announced, Washington said, he was like, this could easily be a 7-hour long movie. Like, he announced, like, this could be one of the longest movies ever made. And it's not. But it just, I think when he was first told the story, and I think when Nolan was first picturing this movie, I think it was that big. I think it was much bigger than what we ended up getting for this movie. It feels like that, but
sorry. It feels like that, but I told you yesterday, like, it's one of those that I watch again. Like, it just dropped on HBO Max Saturday. And I didn't watch it in theaters. I watched it when it came out on Redbox, and then I rented it again on Amazon. Just because it was hard to follow.
It's one of those.
It's visually beautiful. It's
hard to follow.
Visually, it's beautiful. The acting is superb. John David Washington does a great job. Robert Pattinson
does like his best work he's ever done.
Best work he's ever done. Like I seriously. So before this movie, I used to call Robert Pattinson Sparkles.
Just oh my God.
That's the only thing that rung a bell whenever I heard his name or saw him, because I always thought of Twilight and this sparkly guy leaning up against a tree. But then I watched this movie and I'm like, oh, this kid got some real chops on him. Yeah, like, and he has some really good acting. He's done some really great movies. But this is the first movie I'm like, okay, all right, I see you.
He did. I was very surprised with it. And one thing he did joke around and say, he said he did almost an impression of Christopher Nolan for that part. Like, he says, I kind of mimicked his movements with how he describes things and how he talks and how he nods his head. And when I heard that, and I'm watching it again, I'm like, okay, I can see what he was doing. But fun fact about that. So Robert Pattinson, as most of y'all know, hopefully, is going to be the new Batman.
He is the new Batman.
And called The Batman. And he had to audition for this movie while they were filming Tenet. But he didn't want to tell Nolan because, you know, Nolan directed Batman. He's like, I don't want to, like, if it hurts him, like, we're still doing more Batman movies without him. I don't want him to know. So he was all like, I don't know how to tell him. I don't want to tell him I'm auditioning for Batman. So what he does is he tells Christopher Nolan one day, oh, by the way, can I leave early, on Friday? I have a personal thing I have to do. And Nolan just says, you're going to audition for Batman, aren't you? He was like, oh my God. He's like, I'll never know how he knew. Like, I didn't tell anybody. But in the part of me is also thinking
they probably called Nolan and asked him, hey, who do you think would be good?
I'm pretty sure he was like, you got to get this guy. This guy's great.
Yeah, you got to get Robert in there. And I think now they discussed like that version of the movie is going to take, because where they're taking the DCEU, that movie is going to take place on a different Earth.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, anyway. Yeah, we got the Flash thing. That's going to be another fun That's going to be a great movie, by the way. But anyways, yeah. And so with Tenet, and like we said at the beginning, it's a spy thriller with a science fiction twist. But it's a science fiction twist that doesn't, what's the word I'm looking for? It doesn't like draw attention to itself. Mm-mm. It's just there.
Yeah.
And everybody just accepts it. And they're like, she's like, they're getting inverted bullets from the future. And then he just says, okay, so how are they doing that? Okay, I'll go there and check it. And I'm like, dude, I'd be going like, what the hell did you just say? Yeah. Like, wait, shut your mouth.
Time out, what?
And, you know, what's her name? Clements, that actress, she's in there explaining to him at the beginning. And one thing she says is, try not to understand it. Just accept it. And that's kind of Nolan also going like, don't try to dig into what is going on. Just kind of
watch the movie.
Watch the movie.
Enjoy it.
And
But that's why Robert Pattinson's there, to kind of explain what's going on to John David Washington.
True.
You know, and that's...
But you're still going like, what?
And if you haven't seen it, we're not going to give away the ending of this movie because it is still fairly new. It just dropped on HBO Max. If you didn't catch it on Redbox, if you didn't want to rent it, you can still watch it.
Yeah, that's where I'm watching it right now. And it's like I said, they don't draw attention really to the science fiction part of it, but it's there. And the whole time you're just going, what?
Well, so like the first half, maybe the first three quarters of the movie, it's all like a spy thriller. It's all going back and forth. And then there's a point in the movie, there's a scene that happens, and then all of a sudden, all the science just comes out. And the next thing you know, you're just looking at some weird stuff happening.
Like, okay, for instance, you're watching a boat in the ocean, but it's going backwards.
Yeah.
But everyone on the boat is living a regular life going forward.
Or you're watching a land invasion from ground troops with people running forwards and then people running backwards at the same time. Like, there is some weird stuff happening.
And so that shot you just said where it's a wide shot of this battle, which I was really impressed that Nolan was like, I'm going to do a battle. Yeah. I've never done one before. So you see a battle take place and there's a wide shot. And like Rudy said, there's troops going forward, troops going back, explosions being sucked into the ground while explosions going out. And that shot, I was like, that's Christopher Nolan. Like, that is 100% a Christopher Nolan shot. Like, so that's his, that's pure him.
And correct me if I'm wrong, the way that shot was edited together, like they shot everything going forwards, but then he took half the film and then rewinded it basically and then put everything together.
Yeah. So he shot it in sections is probably the best way to say, cause so he has the camera there. You position the camera, you lock it down, you have your actors run forward, cut, you have your actors running, these guys running forward, and then you get all those components and you composite them together, and then you start to bring in, okay, I want those guys in the far shot who are going forward, put them there. Now rewind that
make
footage,
make
them go backwards. Okay, those explosions we got there, now we're going to rewind those and make them go back. And it's so crazy, but it's actually very simple. It's a very simple technique that he used, which is why it won Best Special Effects, because there's visual effects. They're cool, but there's stuff in there that was so smart how they did it.
And also won best production design. No,
I think they only won. They only won one.
They won two, I think.
Mank won two. Tenet won the one. They were nominated, I think, but they only won that one. The car chase sequence in that movie, that I know they had stunt drivers driving backwards.
They were a nominee for best production design.
Which, that back. Okay, I'm glad Mank won, but some of the stuff they did in Tenet, well, I was like, oh my God. But
we had just discussed that on the last. Yeah. Why am I having brain farts?
It's been a few days. But so there is a, like I said, there is a car chase sequence in that movie, and there's a part where it's reversed. And I was like, how did they do some of that? And I looked it up, and he actually had stunt drivers driving backwards to make it to get that effect. You know, to us, it was like, oh, that's so cool. How do you do it? He's like, they just drove backwards. He's like, I have these guys driving forward, and
there you go.
But the way the story, the part of the story, everything else you think is being rewound.
Yeah.
And which I thought was really funny. And yeah, some of that stuff in that movie, I was just blown away.
I was gonna watch it again last night, but I didn't get to it. I'm gonna try watching it again, just because, again, like, there's some parts I just don't understand.
I'm just kidding. Yeah, there's like I was telling you before when you got here, I was like, I get it. The beginning, I'm getting. I'm like, okay. And then once that moment, we're not gonna say what it is, but once that moment happens in the movie, I'm like, I'm gone. I'm lost completely.
I can tell you right now, I love the ending of that movie.
Yeah.
When he goes and sits in the car.
Yeah, that was
like, I love that end. I was like, oh, he finally realizes who he is.
Yep. It's really great. And it's Nolan just, and I'm gonna say he's flexing with this movie. The dialogue, the story, the action. I mean, he legit drove a plane through a building in that movie, and they did it. It's all, and that's another thing with film. He wants it all to be done in camera. Every action piece, every moment has to be done in camera. And the only visual effects he uses is to remove, say, another camera or like the rig, if you may, that's doing it. So, for instance, the most iconic moment in The Dark Knight is the semi truck flipping over in the streets. They had ideas for how to do it, and he said, I want to flip a semi in the middle of Chicago. And they were like, okay, we're going to flip this.
Maybe go get the permit.
And so, Chris Kobold, that's his name. He's a great special effects guy. I think he does a lot of James Bond movies too. Fun fact, I'm going to tell you right now. So, how they did the semi flip was, in the trailer of the truck is a giant piston that shoots down into the ground that forces the truck to go up. And then in Casino Royale, whenever James Bond's driving through the streets and he sees Vespa there in the street, then he flips the car. They use the exact same rig for that. But anyways, same guy too. And so the only visual effects in that scene is the removal of a camera that was on the street. Because if you remember, the camera is looking like this, and then it cuts to the wide going forward. They just removed that camera on the bottom of the screen. That was the only visual effect of that whole scene. Oh, and they removed the piston, of course. I forgot about that. So you see a lot of smoke and exhaust come out. That's the piston firing into the ground.
That's crazy. And I wonder what they used to pull the front end down.
No, that was... Yeah, I don't know how they did that.
Because in the movie you see Christian Bale's character shoot the front end with the hook, go underneath it, weave the wire through, and then go tie it off, and then just wait. Like, how I understand the piston shooting down, that's how the back end gets over. Yeah. But how did they pull that front end down? Because they had to pull it down.
I think I'm not smart. I don't know, but I'm just gonna say I think there's a certain angle that you use, or certain, like, if you do it right here, it will launch it and let you do that.
Yeah,
maybe. I don't know.
It's crazy, man.
But so yeah, a lot of that stuff.
I can just imagine the city of Chicago going, you want to do what?
You want to do what to our city?
Okay, so let's calculate how much damage that's going to do to our street.
And that's another thing. The judge who gets in the car and it says, get in this. This will tell you where you're going. And it says up, and then the car blows up. They were like, okay, we're going to do this for real, but we cannot blow up any of the windows on the street. You can't blow out any of the windows. So they figured it out, and they yelled action. And I think it was one shot. They got it, and they looked like, we're good. We did it. Because that was the biggest fear, was that the blast would destroy pull out the windows. Yeah. And it's a lot of those things Nolan does in camera. Tenet, same thing. And Dunkirk, especially Dunkirk, a lot of that stuff is there, and you're just like, how the hell?
Yeah,
all the dog fight sequences in that movie are all done in camera. And so
it's just crazy to me that everything that he's done, the way he does it, how he's able to bring these stories to life, and a lot of them are original stories that either he finds great writers to write for him, or he himself writes, or him and Jonathan write together. I don't understand why this man does not have an Oscar. I'm not saying Oscars are the pinnacle award. I'm sure he's won a copious amounts of awards throughout his lifetime. But why the Academy refuses to see the greatness that everybody in this world sees? I don't understand. I don't get it. It makes no sense. So that's our take on Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, I mean, that's our little episode of Christopher Nolan.
And it's more of us just talking about Christopher Nolan.
Because we like him. I mean, everybody, just like with Fincher, Christopher Nolan is also one of our favorite directors. And fun fact, he was asked to do Star Wars Episode 7. Kathleen Kennedy asked him, and he said,
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Because he said no because one, I want to watch it. I don't want to put myself through that. I want to see it as a person. He goes, and two, whoever takes it has to have, his words, colossal balls to take that on. He goes, I'm not going to do it. And so, again, I can only imagine him doing
it. I wonder if he watched all three of them and then now is like, I probably should have done that.
I could have done one. No, but I think he.
Can you imagine him doing like
a Star Wars story?
Yeah,
like, yeah. I would love to see that.
I would love to see him. I know they're doing an Andor series now. I would have loved to see him do a spy thriller movie with Cassian Andor on film. Great. It would have been fantastic. Awesome. It would have been fantastic. Anyway.
All right, Kathleen Kennedy, you just heard us talk. I'm sorry. But yes, guys, thank you so much for listening to our episode. Hopefully we kept you entertained. Tune in next week for another great topic. I'm James.
And I'm Rudy.
Y'all have a great week.